First speaker, it's Kevin I from Baltimore.
I am an addict. My name is Kevin. I guess we're all in here. We all know the topic. I'm just so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful to be clean. You know, I've seen people start coming in the door, and I seen a gentleman, I guess about 5 years ago. He was somebody that wanted to be of service. And you know how to carry the message in a detox, you're supposed to have like a year clean. But this guy had like 7 months clean, and I remember we had a small talk, and he didn't know about it. But I remember thinking, should I be like, oh, you're supposed to have a year clean? Just, you know, show up and do a meeting, you know, because this guy kept showing up. But he showed up, and he kept showing up. And the ironic thing about all this is I was riding down the street with my mom. She wanted to go to Walmart, and I'm in my little car, and end up getting an accident. But anyway, I totaled my car, and, you know, this gentleman gave me a car. And I'd have never got here if I never had a ride. You know, I mean, I would have got here. But, you know, I got here by, I want to thank the grace and mercy of Narcotics Anonymous and the ability to give. To tell you a little bit about myself, I grew up in Southwest Baltimore. I was a quiet little kid. I grew up on Pratt and Addison Alley. I grew up in a highly infested drug environment, and I guess I grew up wanting to be a pimp, a hustler, you know. I never really went to school that much. I quit school in sixth grade, and I was talking to a friend of mine, and I could just sit and imagine in school when they would call my name and would say, is Kevin I there? And they say, absent, you know. I just didn't show up. But I hit my bottom on Wilkins Avenue about 1 o'clock at night after the 96 snowstorm. And it was a couple days after Christmas, and I had just got a Christmas gift from a trick of mine. It was a Periella sweater, and I had the sweater on for 2 days, and I knew not to pull the tags off of it because I was going to have to sell it. And I remember thinking to myself that I could take it up on the hill and get two valves of cane for it. And, you know, so I did that, and I remember fighting in the alley because it was so cold and my hips kept freezing up. And I remember thinking that, you know, there's got to be another way, you know. And I had been to rehab times beforehand. I remember showing up to a meeting one time when I was younger, and Space was chairing an NA meeting, and I said, hey, what's up, Space? How you doing? And Space was like, you know, my name is David. And, you know, I thought y'all got clean and started acting funny. I was like, you know, he's from the neighborhood, and he acting all funny. He got all clean, you know. And, I thought this recovery thing was like a Jack Handy Saturday night skit, you know, tell yourself that you are happy, you know. Yeah, but anyway, 1 o'clock in the morning after I got rid of my sweater and I couldn't get off, I knew there was another way. And I wanted to try it. And being new in recovery, I took any suggestion y'all would give me. I just knew that there were some things that I had to do. And, you know, I vigilantly try to work the steps. They say we keep what we have only with vigilance. And that's the key, because I got abstinent in recovery. And for me, abstinence in recovery is when you have the ability to sit in a meeting and not hear a word anybody's saying. And for me, looking at myself, when that happens to me, it's because I'm caught up in self, you know? And when I'm trying to fix self, I go outside of self. But the only way to change self is inside self. You know, I got to look inside me to find out what's going on with me to deal with some of the things that I need to deal with. And other things that I arrive complacent is lack of understanding. You know, I should shut down. I have this inability to deal with my emotions or process my emotions sometime today. And I got clean January 18th, 1996. Not that that matters, but I have a little bit of time to, you know, take a look at myself in recovery. I have a story in recovery today. You know, dealing with life on life's terms is real hard. And sometimes you get hit hard, you know, and you just don't know how to deal with it. And, you know, I was working on my job and I ended up getting electrocuted. And, you know, I was in a hospital and I was laid up. But the good news is you can call a lawyer, you know what I'm saying? You can sue. But the bad news is you sit and wait for the money. So I got complacent. And, you know, my one of my sponsors used to say you could tell somebody's program by the bed they make. You know, the bed you lay in is the bed you make. And I wasn't making my bed. And in all areas of my life, I started not doing the necessary things that I need to do to stay clean for me. And I was going through the motions, going to my home group, talking to my sponsor. In fact, at points in time, I was even working the steps. But one of the key things my sponsor told me was, you got to let the old you go to let the new you move in. And I'm so comfortable with familiar pain. To this day, you know, when you get a job, when you get a car, when you get a house, when you get something, when you can have a certain seat in the meeting because somebody say, yeah, that's dude's seat. You know, you get some respect. You know, I don't want to tell you how fucked up I am, you know, because sometimes I think it's like having clout or something, you know. But I said it in the very beginning, I am an addict and my name is Kevin. I didn't dress it up in any way. You know, I just said, I am an addict and my name is Kevin. You know, because I tried to get in a lot of cliques and groups when I was a kid, and sometimes I find myself doing the same thing in the program. And I talked about early on in recovery. Usually when I get something I want, I'm content. I don't have to work the steps no more. I don't have to call my sponsor as much. I don't have to be honest with you people as much. Shit, I gotta tell on myself because, like, you know, stuff is, you know, I'm going on some things that's happening in my life that are different for me. I've managed to remove myself from my parent, my mother, and my mother suffers from a mental illness, and she was staying at the house a hot minute. She would get in the shelter, but she would get back out, and basically she wasn't really doing the things she needed to do, like to live life. And she, my mom would drive me crazy. Like, I ain't allowed to lock my bedroom door and shit like that. And my mom loves me a lot. I mean, ain't nothing wrong with that. It's just, you know, I can't deal with it sometimes, you know. And, you know, I had to let my mom go. And, you know, today she just got an apartment. And she's supposed to be moving in. And I feel so relieved that I ain't got to sit and worry about my mom, you know, like being posted at Dunkin' Donuts and shit, you know, and running the streets. And, you know, she don't like no caramel macchiatos, you know. She likes her Dunkin' Donuts coffee. So there's somebody I care about a lot that things are starting to change in my life. And, I just feel so overwhelmed and so grateful, and so grateful to know that, like, when I work on me, things start to change. I'm currently on my 9th step. My sponsor reminds me about my next amends, and that's to my brother. And my mother gave my brother up for adoption when I was younger. And basically, he detached himself from contact with my mom, and I really ain't care. And, I did a lot of hurt to my brother because growing up in my neighborhood, I wasn't like one of them bad-ass kids. You know, I would just take an ass-whipping and go home and beat the shit out of my little brother, you know. I got some amends to make. And I got to put forth the effort to contact him, and I know it's possible today. And, I got to do that, and that's the next part of my 9th step. He's the next name on my list. And as far as the steps and sponsorship, I've had a lot of sponsors, and I've made a lot of mistakes because I thought a sponsor was supposed to be subhuman, have the ability to spiritually levitate in the room, call me when needed, you know what I'm saying? And if they don't call me and, such and such, I just have to fire them. You know what I mean? Just have to let them go. It took me a while to actually, my first sponsor was named Greg Daviar. He passed away. He brung the meeting in Salvation Army where I lived at. And Greg knew me. He knew me real good. And he really gave me a lot of attention and a lot of love, and I didn't understand that. I didn't really understand it, but I knew I was in good hands. And my sponsor had a disease, and he died, and he never really told me. He listened to my problems, but didn't tell me about his. And he passed away, and I didn't really understand it. But today I understand the ability to listen to somebody without, dropping your shit on them. I don't know if he had that gift. But sometimes if you overwhelm my ass, I just start dropping my shit on you. Like, yeah? My mom won't leave the patio. She's been out there for 3 days, you know what I mean, with the same cup of, or whatever. I'm just joking. But, today my life has totally changed. Thank God to actually reading the basic text, chapter 9, I never understood it. Everything we know in life is subject to revision, especially what we know about the truth. I think there's all kind of recoveries. There's discovery. For me, it was discovery because I ain't gained nothing back. I didn't have a house, car. I didn't have no self-esteem, no hope. I ain't had nothing. It was all discovery. It was all brand new to me. Recovery, you can just cover the fuck up in this joint. You can just hide up. There's a whole lot. Everybody's got their own definition of what recovery is. And to me, recovery is dealing with emotions and feelings. And I came up in this joint with one feeling, which was anger. I hate you. I'm angry at you. And really, that was just, I'm fearful of you. And, my man Richard gave me a real strong piece that I'm probably going to keep with me the rest of my life, and it really is a jewel. And, the 4 steps says we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Fearless. That always scared me. I was always a little fearful of that. But all that word fearless means is loving. So if that word bothers you, change it to loving. And today I do love myself. I do. There's some times that I can't, I'm not okay with everything. But I can look in the mirror today and feel pleased. And not from the simple fact that I ain't back on the corner I'm not using. That's just a major gift in itself. I just have a different outlook on life and a different perspective. I've learned so much from these people. A guy that, I help out with sometimes. I had a major, major resentment with a person in recovery. And I had 4 years clean, and I made a conscious choice to never, ever talk to this person ever again. Except I would just talk bad about them behind their back. And I did that. I swear to God, I never said one word, never nodded my head. I look at you a little bit, you know. Like, if we weren't in a program, we'd be fighting, you know. But I never talked with him. And I thought he did me so wrong. He did me so bad, you know what I mean? And he had, you know, clean time and all this stuff. Because I like to put expectations on people, you know. But I realized this is, you know, I can't forgive other people if I can't forgive myself. You know what I mean? You know, y'all say, you know, we'll love you till you love yourself. I think it's bullshit. I think you got to love yourself a little bit to love somebody else. I swear, I think that's the truth. You know, so in the process of forgiving myself, I forgave him. And the understanding that, yeah, you owe him amends because you've been badgering his ass for 5 years. You done did more dirt to him now than he did to you, you know? And realized that I was a participant, you know? I was an active member because my whole life I managed to sing the Somebody Done Me Wrong song with a blame thrower, you know? I don't care if I'm working a step. It wasn't my fault. I like to prove it wrong. I like to, you know, show you how nice and caring and loving and, you know, I've been altered, you know what I'm saying? And it was the fact is my father was never around or, you know, certain circumstances or I'm a product of the environment, you know. I can't accept me for me. And saying all that with resentment, because I get in resentment and I get complacent because I forget what I'm supposed to be doing. And the ones you resent are your greatest teachers of honesty, open-mindedness, and forgiveness. Something like that. But it's deep. No, I'm serious. Next time, start hating on somebody and think about that. Just take, you know, just take a high thought. They are your greatest teachers of patience and humility. You can just go ahead. So my outlook has changed today, but I still get complacent with going. I've been through the step process, and I think I know something. I get complacent, you know. Because I can't keep an open mind. And sometimes, you know, I like to think I got all the answers. But more and more I stay clean, the more I realize that I don't got all the answers. That I don't know that much. I'm really at a loss for words. I'm so grateful that, you know, I'm up here. I'm so grateful for all my friends showing up. I'm so grateful I'm alive. A grateful addict will never use. I ain't never seen nobody say, I'm so grateful today. I'm going to just go out and, you know, get me a Billy or a bag of dope and go to Oil Joint Shooting Gallery. I don't know what they call them in New York, but, you know. But and I know, and it ain't the drug, you know. It ain't the drug. It's the feelings, you know. I realize a hug, what a hug does for me, is let me feel, and it's let me deal, and lets me heal. You know, when I come in contact with another addict, I don't have to say anything. It's somehow, it's just this feeling of surrender. All the spiritual principles come in once when I'm ready. You know, if I ain't just hugging and say, look how many people I hug, you know what I mean? When you hug somebody and you're going through something and you feel this sense of relief, you know, in the sense that somebody cares about you, unconditionally. I never knew what unconditional love meant. And I'm still learning. I don't know what love means. I'm going to tell you my definition of love. I was telling my friend, I think love is like 10 years down the road or 20 years when you look at it, it's like, you know, I love your no-neck ass. And she's like, I love your, you know, your big ass. Yeah, I love you. And then she might say, honey, why don't you get that drink for me? And you're like, why don't you get that shit yourself? I'm busy sitting here reading a book. You know, I think love is just a whole bunch of, like, surrender, forgiveness, honesty, understanding, all wrapped. And love is a spiritual principle. And I get so caught up trying to find love. But I told you I tried to find self outside of self. The new Air Force Ones, the bigger TV, you know what I mean? Sometimes I do it in the gym. I work out. I work my body to be presentable for you. But I don't go inside to see where I'm at. And a friend of mine hits me with this word, motives. You know, I came up through a TC, encounter group, you know what I mean? And that's not the program in Narcotics Anonymous. But I've been hit with that word motives a lot. But when I think about motives, like, what is my motive for getting clean? Initially, I just wanted to be clean. I want my fingernails to be clean. You know what I mean? I wanted to get my weight back and keep it because y'all said it was like, I went through Francis Scott Key detox 5 times. Last time I was in there, they said, you lucky you got back in. The dude that brung me there, his name was Old Man Jack. And look, I'm all Narcotics Anonymous, but Old Man Jack was in the other fellowship. And I liked Old Man Jack because he talked about putting antabuse in the coffee when he was young because he wanted to find, I mean, when he was new in recovery because he wanted to find out who was drunk and who wasn't. I just thought that was funny because I wanted to see a whole bunch of alcoholics like shaking, you know what I mean, with medallions on and shit. You know, I thought it was funny. So Old Man Jack drops me off. He passed away. He passed away, but he dropped me off, and he gave me $5. He used to see me in the nut ward. He'd bring me Lucky Strike cigarettes without the filter, because that's what he smoked. Be like 78 years old smoking some Lucky Strikes. But anyway, I seen $5 as an opportunity to get a half partner. And I can remember the man in detox saying, if you leave here, you cannot come back. And I remember keeping that with me. I can't come back there no more. I'm so glad today I can come back. You know, this is the only place in the whole world. You know, I was talking to somebody about basketball, and I was always the last one. I'm not very athletic. You know what I mean? Like, they would pick the blind kid over me to play b-ball. But in here, you're the first one to get. If you're the last one to get picked out there, you're the first one to get picked in here. You know, I truly believe this is like the land of misfit toys. You watched it. You know, he ain't saying his helper, but he want to be a dentist. You know what I mean? The land of misfit toys. Somehow we just get together in here and develop this camaraderie. You know, I think complacent, like I got involved in service work. And I think the greatest service you could ever do is pick up the phone 2 a.m, go pick somebody up. When you in the meeting talking to Booty Cootie Susie and Runny Nose Bob says, man, can you give me a lift home? And you like, all right, Susie, I'll talk to you later. I'm going to get Bob a ride home. That's some service right there. But I mean service work in general, area, region, stuff like that. But you know, you ever go to your area service meeting, and I never understood this for the life of me, that word, yay, nay, or abstain. I abstain. To me, that's like, I'm absent. I'm absent. I just don't want to be, I don't know. That's just mine. But I can show up at the meeting and not listen to what somebody's saying. I abstain, you know. Think about it. We get a whole lot better vote if people didn't abstain. But anyway, I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful for Danny giving me that van. And I'm grateful for a lot of things. And I just hope I keep my gratitude by keeping a positive outlook on why I'm here. And the blessings of life. I'm so glad to, like, wake up and just feel like I want to go get some breakfast, you know, and just relax. I feel so good just to relax. I was so caught up in drama. You know, my life has changed in 2 years because I was caught up with who was who was doing who, and guess what happened to Sue, and you know what I mean? This one used and that one. When I'm out of that circle of what's happening bad to other people, nobody comes up to me and says, guess what, dude just graduated. Yeah, he just got done his fifth step. You know what I mean? I don't hear shit like that. You know, half the time it's talking bad about somebody else. And I do it to feel better about myself. So that's a weird thing, you know, to hurt somebody to make yourself feel better. But I know one thing. Anything that's ever happened to me in my life, I've learned to share it in a meeting before you start sharing it about me. I've also learned that a lot of times some of the shit I have to share involves other people, and I don't have the right to free myself at other people's expense. But on the flip note of that is, if you caught up in a bank robbery and I decide to drop dime, I'm going to do it because it's about me too, you know? I like to hear myself talk. I think I talked enough. And I look forward to hearing our next speaker. I think I found it.
Thanks, Kevin. Our second speaker is Anthony A. from New York City.
Hi, family. Anthony Attic.
Anthony.
Thank God I'm clean. Thank God I ain't used just for the day. You know, the topic, abstinence does not equal recovery.
Thank you.
You know, abstinence does not equal recovery.
Thank you.
All right, now, I know, like, it might not equal recovery, but it's very important. Because there's some times when my recovery could go out the window, but I hold on to the abstinence. I just don't want to use. And I hear it a lot, like, I could be bugging, but I just don't want to use. The abstinence piece that keeps me, you see? For me, abstinence doesn't equal recovery, but I need to be abstinent to recover. And I can't recover if I'm not abstinent. You know, I'm from New York. I'm a Puerto Rican that grew up in Harlem. So I was always hiding because I grew up with the brothers. My mother didn't know a lick of English, and I was embarrassed for her. Not for me, for her. You know, we would be playing Skelsies or Tops or Cops and Robbers or some shit, kick the can. And when the lights went on, the street lights went on, you know, we lived on the fourth floor. She would stick her head out the window and go, Anthony! And I would look up, and my boys be like, who the fuck is that? Now, I was the best kick the can player in the world, because when she called my name, I would go hide, then go upstairs and shit. You know, because I didn't want my friends to know that that was my mother. You know? And I wanted to fit in, and I wanted to fit in so bad, you know, that it was like I would do anything. So I started sniffing glue. I took up hobbies like models. My father would buy these model airplanes and model cars, right? And I would take the glue and sniff it, right? And I had boxes and boxes of unmade cars and airplanes in my room. And he used to ask me, you know, yo, son, when I'm going to see one of these cars, man? I buy that for you, and you're not showing me nothing, man. And I moved on. You know, the older I got, you know, the more drugs came into play, you know. We moved to, you know, when I got comfortable being with the brothers, my mother moved to the east side where all the Puerto Ricans was at. And now she comfortable, but I'm not. So I'm 12 years old, and I'm like, damn. And the Puerto Ricans are looking at me saying, you're not Puerto Rican. Now, I just went through about 5-6 years of saying, you Puerto Rican? Speak Spanish. So now I'm on the east side. We ain't playing basketball. We're playing baseball. Puerto Ricans don't play baseball. In New York, right, you got Puerto Ricans. They play baseball. The brothers play basketball. That's how it go. So now I got to learn how to play baseball, and I'm not good at it. But I'm busting their ass in basketball, you know what I'm saying? So now it's like I'm fitting in. I start going to school and, you know, weed comes into play. And now I go to high school. And, all, you know, mescaline, black beauties, cocaine. Angel dust. I found my drug. You know, I found a drug that I felt like Spider-Man, Superman, Batman. You know, but it didn't have the effects like the other drugs. I couldn't move when I smoked dust. I used to just get stuck. For hours. And it's bad when they could rob you and you can't do nothing about it. Because your mind, you see, my mind used to go, Anthony, they just took your watch. Anthony, they just went through your pockets. And I wanted to chase him, you know. I would. And it was, they didn't run away, they walked away, you know. You know. And you know, when they would come down and I could move again and I could walk, I say, I got to learn a new way. So I would put all my stuff in my socks and hide my money. See, it never said stop. I had a disease that never told me stop. It just said, find a better way. Hide your money in your socks. When you get paid, hide your money in the closet. Just spend $5. And I live to use and use to live. I smoked dust from 1972 to 1984. Just straight up PCP dust. Until a friend of mine introduced me to this shit called crack. And like for me, it's like, see, I couldn't move. I was stuck, but I was happy. You understand? Like, I would spend about $15 to $20 a day, you know, just smoking dust and being cool. See, because I was cool when I was dusty. A brother that don't move is cool. I'm not looking for no problems. No problems looking for me. You know, so I'm like, yeah. I enjoyed being like that. But he came and shook this vial up. Said, "Ann, you got some dust?" I said, "Yeah, what's that?" He said, "Some new shit, Ann." I'm always down for some new shit. Now, if you say, Anthony, go pick a new career and start your life, I go, no, hell no. But say, yo, I got some new shit. Okay. And he crushed it up, and we laced the dust. My dust made noise for the first time in 14 years. It made this like. And then, when we was over, I walked away. I walked away, dusty. I was not paralyzed no more. So now I could enjoy smoking dust and moving. Now you can't stick me up no more. You can't take my watch. You cannot go in my pockets. But I have a disease that say, all right, and you got to smoke more of this shit. I ain't never smoked dust like back to back to back to back to back. But I had a disease that said, yo, do that shit again. Do that shit again. I was like one of them toys that, you know how you wind up a toy and it walk? Like it looked like when the crack wore off and the dust came to head, I stopped. So when the crack came down, now I'm dusty, now I stop. I say, damn, I got to get started again. And I smoke some more crack and less dust. More crack, less dust. More crack. Less dust. Until now, instead of being a dust head, I'm a crack head. Now I'm selling shit. I ain't never sold a get high. For dust, I spend my money. I ain't never had to sell anything to smoke dust. So it was a whole new ball game now. I ain't never robbed my mother to get dust. I ain't never, you know, do a lot of the shit that I did to get dust. But this disease, the progressiveness of it, was like out to kill me. So I had to learn how to abstain. Now for me, once I started, you know, my mother, right, at the end, she used to talk to me through a peephole. She didn't let me in the house. Ma, what you want? Ma, I'm hungry, Ma. Okay, step away from the door. I'm talking about my mother. Okay, put the plate in front of the door. I thought to you, you look messed up, man. You look bad. And then I go on a 3-day run, and I come back again. Ma. Ma. What you want? Ma, I'm going to stop, Ma. Yeah, you're going to start knocking on my door. You need to get help. Anthony, mira, coño, man. You're not my son no more. Go get help. Now I have a disease that robs me of my soul, my spirit. It robs me. That's all it does. You know, they talk about the disease being physical, mental, and spiritual. And at the end, you know, I was just living in an animalistic world. I didn't have feelings. I ain't give a fuck how you felt. It was all about using, getting the next one. And, I went into a detox, right? Because I saw my man, he looked good. When we was getting high together, I was like, oh, shit, man, what's up, man? He said, yo, Aunt, man, it's getting cold out here. I said, yeah, I know. Yeah. Yo, man, you go to this hospital, man, they feed you and all everything, man. You just go there, man, you can get your shit together for 10 days, come back out and get it start rolling again. So when I went into this detox, I ain't going there with the thoughts of recovery. I ain't going there with the thoughts of stop using. I went in there to get 3 meals a day and some rest, man. But these dudes would come up every day and they presentation, man, in the middle of the Cosby Show or Jefferson. You know, when I had a Boston in my hand and they like, all right, stop the games. There's a meeting going on. Come on. And they would just bring the message of hope. Because they told us the message is hope. The promise is freedom from active addiction. That when you leave here, make a meeting. And hope, meeting. And they ain't let us share. But we had to ask a question. So I would ask questions like, yo, y'all don't get high at all? And the dude would answer back, we don't get high just for the day. Yo, like when it's Christmas and New Year's, y'all don't drink? Alcohol is a drug. We are the people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. Yo, y'all don't get high at all? Yo, there's a meeting list, man. Show up. When you leave here, show up. So I go to my first meeting. Is anybody here for the first time coming out of a detox? Yeah, my name is Anthony. Welcome. All right, thank you. Now sit down. Shut up. And they came and they gave me some literature. Everybody wrote their phone numbers in the meeting list, and they told me to keep coming. The readings are so important at the beginning. I loved Who's an Addict, because it was the shortest one. I got tired by the time you got to How It Works, when it said alcohol is a drug. See, now we let people know, like, what? Say that again? But alcohol is a drug. So I went home, I drank a beer, and I came the next day. And they started counting clean time. Anybody here from 1 to 30 days? How many days you got? I got 2 days. Keep coming back. And I go home, and I drink a beer, and I come back. Anybody got 1 to 30? Yeah, man, I got 12 days today. Yeah, man, keep coming back. Then I got the courage to get up and get some coffee, right? And when I got the coffee, I'm talking to this brother, and he's like, yo, man, you coming, I see you, man. You doing the right thing, man. You looking good, man. I say, yeah, man, all I do is drink beer, man. I got 12 days today. I go home, I have me a beer, I chill, and then I come the next day, man. I got 12 days. So he did the NA step back. He said, man, I don't want to bust your bubble, man. But you ain't got no days, man. I said, what are you talking about? He said, you don't listen to the readings, man? Alcohol is a drug, man. You know, you drinking beer, man. You ain't got no days. And that, like, blew me away. Like, what? I worked so hard to get these 12 days. See, because, you know, I didn't have a problem with beer, but I was heading that way. Because one beer turned to two, you know. And then it lead me to the drug of my choice. So I was heading that way, but I didn't have a problem at the beginning. And I was so hurt because I thought that I was doing this. In my mind, I thought I was doing this, right? So he said, it's all right, man. Just keep coming, man. Just don't drink. That's all. You know, kept coming, stopped drinking, kept coming, stopped drinking. And I lived with my mother, right? And my mother was like a person where she gave me a chance. She saw that I was trying, and she gave me a chance. And the only thing was I couldn't have any keys. Somebody had to be in the house. I had to get searched when I left. And I had to leave when she got up to go to work. You know, when you're homeless, you go for all that shit, right? Okay. And, you know, it's like being searched is not, you know, damn, it's no trust. You know, I'm trying to do this, man. Okay, don't worry, you keep coming. I started to make meetings, and I got 20-something days. And this voice came out of nowhere and said, Aunt, man, you looking good, man. You looking good. You doing the right thing, man. Keep making them meetings, man. But you know what? They haven't taken any urine yet. I was like, damn, they did. Smoke one, man. You ain't got to tell nobody. You fucked up with the beer by telling people. Don't tell nobody. No, if you would have not told that dude, you still could have been drinking, having your days clean. So don't tell nobody. So I make a meeting and I don't say anything. And the next day I make a meeting and I don't say that I feel like getting high. See, because it was not a feeling, it was a thought. And the thought, you know, the obsession and the compulsion to use started just. Now I'm sitting in the meetings scared to share that I want to get high because I think you're going to judge me. I think that you're going to run away from me. You know, but I'm holding on to my 20-something days, right? But I get 30 days clean. And y'all clapped. And y'all gave me a keychain. And I was happy. And I went home. And I showed my mother a 30-day keychain. And she said, you doing good? You keep going to the meeting with them people, and then you could get keys for that keychain. In your house. Because you're not getting keys for my house. And I picked up because she didn't love me. And I went and I picked up where I left off. So I was not abstinent anymore. And my sponsor called me and I was getting high. And he said, Ann, how you doing, man? I said, I'm all right, I'm chilling. I haven't seen you in meetings for a while. What's going on? I got a job, man. Yeah, but Anthony, those that make meetings regularly stay clean. Yeah, but I be getting home tired, man. He said, yo, Ann, it's only 90 minutes a day. Ann, you getting high? Nah, man, I ain't getting high. It's okay. It's all right if you lie to me, but when you lie to yourself, you got a problem. And you getting high?
Yeah, man, I'm getting high, man. I'm fucked up. I can't stop.
And he says, well, there's a meeting that goes start in an hour and a half. You know, show up. You know, matter of fact, let's do better. I go come get you and we go to this meeting. He said, "You got any drugs?" I said, "Yeah, I'm getting high right now." He said, "All right, flush him down the toilet, and come when I ring the bell, just come down." Now, y'all, you know, I listened to y'all. For the 30 days I was here, y'all said no major decisions. In the first year. Y'all said that, I didn't. I might have not followed all the suggestions, but I followed the ones that suited me, right? Flush the drugs, make a meat. Or I could do both. So I smoked the rest of the drugs. He rang the bell and I went downstairs and I made a meeting. And first thing he asked me was, "Anthony, did you flush the drugs?" And I got honest and I said, "Nah, man, I smoke, man." And he looked at me and said, "I would have did the same thing." I came into recovery, November. I was high. That the last time I got high was November 17th, 1986. My first clean day is November 18th, 1986. And I've been on this journey, right? Now, we talk about abstinence does not equal recovery, right? But recovery is not a destination. It's a journey. It's not someplace where we're going to get and stop. It's going to keep going and going. But to get to that recovery place, I got to stay abstinent. You know, so I need to be abstinent in order to recover. You know, I can't just be like, you know, I have to have both. Because there's going to be days that are not good days in recovery. Because life be throwing us curves and shit like that. Life be like, you know, when my girl leave me for another girl, the only thing I need to hold on to is my clean time. You know, because I want to beat somebody. I want to hurt somebody because I want them to feel like I'm feeling. I don't know how to always keep it on me. It's easy to say, "Keep it on you, Anthony." When everything is going all right, keep it on you. When you're going through some shit, it's hard. You're looking to put blame. You're looking to take that anger and put it on somebody else. And I wanted to do that, so it's like, sometimes that abstinent piece, I got to hold on to it, man. Because the recovery is going to take place, you know, because they say, "This too shall pass." But I got to hold on to the abstinence. Because if I don't, I can't recover. You know, there's a lot of solutions in this process. You know, the steps, you know. Like, you know, now if you tell me money doesn't equal recovery, I could agree with that. If you say prestige doesn't equal recovery, I could agree with that. See, because money, property, and prestige, they just there to divert us. See, because I know coming in here, I'm clean, right? I'm abstinent, right? But I'm not recovering. I'm practicing some unspiritual shit. But I'm clean. You know, you could look in the mirror and dress it up like, "Damn, I look good." But inside, I'm in pain like a motherfucker. But I look good. I got a nice car outside, but I beat my woman. I got a beautiful house, but I don't take care of my kids. Because I'm looking at the outside. I'm a person that looked at the outside. But I cannot judge my recovery. You know, I can't say because I have 18 years clean that a person that don't have 18 years clean is not recovering. See, I'm going to fall short. I came in here not to be perfect, just to get better. See, because that was my problem at the beginning. If I made a mistake or if I did something unspiritually, if I fell, if I acted out on my character defects, and I fell short, I thought that I was not working the program to the best of my ability. I thought that, damn, this shit is fucked up. Or I would listen to somebody quote a page out the book, say, yeah, on page 53 of the basic text, it says, I'd be fucked up because I said, like, God damn, how he could do that shit? He only got 2 years. What am I not doing that I can't do that? See, but I came in here, I don't know what level of pain, I don't know what path you took to take to Narcotics Anonymous, so I can't judge my insides with your outsides. I would stay fucked up. And if I'm recovering, see, because I know a lot of people, and I've heard it in meetings share that if you don't work the steps and just abstain, you're going to go crazy. And that is true. You fall short. You rob yourself of the joy and the freedom that this program has to offer. But that is your choice. All we ask you to do is don't pick up and make a meeting. And when you start to recover, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, that is your choice. My job is to stay here and help you when you get to a point in your recovery that you need help, to just put my arms out, hug you, and say, keep coming. I'm here to help you. I don't care how much clean time you got. I don't care how much little clean time or what. It's a day at a time. So when I come in here and I'm like, damn, you right where you're supposed to be? Or I'm not where I'm supposed to be at, then I got to look in the mirror and say, where am I going with this? Where am I going to be with this? Why, you know, I got a God that I pray to on a regular basis, right? On a daily basis, excuse me, because regular could be every other day, right? But daily is every day, so I got to correct that. On a daily basis. See, because without him, he guides me. Now, there are times, like, I grab my will back here. You know, I'll be like, I grab my will back. And I go like, all right, everything is cool. I don't have no problems. I don't have no situations. God, I'm going to take the wheel right now. And I drive myself into a corner that I can't get out until I go, God, I need help. Instead of just letting him coast. See, because God, my God drives me at 15 miles an hour. I like driving 65. I want to get to the problem right away. You know? So when I take the wheel and I speed up, I'm destroying my process. So I try to stay in this process a day at a time, man. You know, abstinence doesn't equal recovery, but it's right up there. You know, like air and water is right up there. I cannot recover unless I'm abstinent. I can't. You know, before the meeting, right, Kevin, right, this is a small world. We know the same people. They were talking about a spot on 129th, boy, they was on 129th Street and Carvin Avenue in the basement, right? If you ever come to New York at 11 o'clock at night, we have a meeting, right? And it looked like you go cop, but you go cop recovery, right? Because it's you got to go through a back alley into a basement to a back room that don't have any windows. You know what I'm saying? It's a little-ass room, but we recovering. And he was saying, yeah, you know Little Herman? I said, get the fuck out of here, man. Everybody knows Little Herman. And you know, it was like an identification. It was like, oh, shit, that is so cool. Because I could go anywhere in this world and meet a recovering addict that knows somebody, that knows somebody, that knows somebody. And the only way that happens is to stay clean. You know, I would never have thought that I would have been in this process this long. I didn't come in here to stay here for 18 years. I didn't come in here to come in here and get what I got to go back out there and give it back. You know, I come in here to be a successful member of society. Today I'm acceptable. And it ain't got to be to society, but to my family and my friends. You know, so if you're just starting on this journey, enjoy it. Strap in and keep coming back. And I want to thank the Ocean City area, CPRCNA, for having me speak, and thank you for letting me share.